If I could ask our legislators to go ahead and make their way forward and find a spot here at one of the tables, if y'all don't mind. That includes you too, Senator Westerfield. But as our legislators do come forward, I do want to thank our park staff for all their assistance with today's luncheon. And in my opinion, you can't find a much better place to get in the Christmas spirit, again, if you ask me. So let's give them a round of applause, if you would. Now, you just have it. Fine. Y'all can sit there. We have plenty of room on both sides. Before we do get into our panel discussion, I did want to mention the Pinneral Ad legislative priorities that are in your packet. Bluetooth mode. A little too close, wasn't it? But you will find our legislative priorities there in your packet. I would like to specifically mention information, and this is to our legislators, information about the grant program. I know each and every one of you all were very instrumental in getting the grant program passed last year, but we are asking, if at all possible, a few enhancements to be made with that program, just to make it more user-friendly, I guess, for our communities is a better way to say that. But you will find in our priorities sort of some of the things that not only our agency has worked through, but the Cabinet for Economic Development, the Kentucky Association for Economic Developers has also worked on, has a very similar list that we do. So hopefully you all will have a chance to take a look at that and help us that in the next session. But now for our legislative update portion of our program. And let me just say, first, thank you all for joining us. Always appreciate you all taking time out of your busy schedule to come join us today. And I've said it before, and I'm going to keep saying it. You're going to hear me say it. We are so fortunate here in our region to have the representation in Frankfort that we do. So let's give them a round of applause, please. So let's dig in just a little bit. I have a few questions. So what we did is I asked our executive committee to put together some questions for us that they would like for you all to potentially address for today's luncheon. And I did send that out to you all. So hopefully you would have an opportunity to look anything up that you might need to. But we'll just get started. We're hearing that more than likely the General Assembly will be looking to again lower the income tax rate here in Kentucky, which who doesn't like lower income taxes? However, there has been some recent information from the budget office that says revenues are expected to decrease year over year, which we haven't seen in a while. Do you feel this will impact funds available for projects and initiatives at the local level, and will there be a push to look at other revenue sources? Somebody grab the microphone.
You know, it looks like as we implemented this, we really have some really good safeguards in there that has to have double the income to make sure we always cover our expenses and everything. And you are right, it's supposed to go to 3.5. That's probably going to be the first bill we're going to vote on when we get back up to Frankfort January 7th. And then, you know, we knew around 3% somewhere over the next couple of years we could start hitting a snag. And so we will definitely be working on that and seeing what we can do to keep furthering that down. But I don't see it affecting any. It's basically, you know, all of us, we need to put our needs out there first before our wants. And Chair Petrie's always said that we can cover our needs, then, you know, when we had that $5 billion surplus the other day and everyone got single projects, that was really nice. And I think hopefully we can continue and have a surplus where we can't do that.
I just remind you that the approach we took to start marching towards zero was the more responsible approach. There were those among the legislature, and several years ago I was one of them, that would just prefer we switched, that we just got to zero. Because I see what Tennessee does to us. and they're eating our lunch, and I'd love to not have that be the case anymore in a lot of different ways. But that's irresponsible, and it would have been foolish for us to do that, and I mean that in the most sincere sense. It would have been really fiscally dangerous for us to just switch. We created a bill that allows us to step down slowly over time, and we have to hit certain revenue marks before we're able to do that. Now, I'm not going to be there to vote. I'm looking forward to the drop to 3.5%, and I certainly want it to get to zero pretty badly. But I also want us to get there in a responsible way, and what this requires us to do, it might mean that zero gets there a lot later than we'd like, but we're allowing the growth and the ridiculous investment that your General Assembly has helped foster in this Commonwealth over the last number of years, some $20 billion, $21 billion, over the entire Commonwealth, and allows that to catch up and allows that job growth to happen. That all takes time. We can cut a lot faster than that growth takes to occur. We still need to allow that growth to occur. Ideally, that revenue will be replaced with tax revenue and whatever other revenue comes in the door. And I know the legislature will look at other revenues down the road. I think that'll have to be part of the conversation years from now. But this is just part of it. It may not be able to drop as fast as we'd like because we need to do it in a way that doesn't cut off the supply of resources our government needs to provide the services we all count on, whether it's in our communities or in our own families.
Let me just say that I agree with what's already been said. We agreed to, try to cut the income tax from 6% to zero, but do it in a responsible way. I look forward to maybe 3.5% this year, and hopefully a little bit down the road, another 0.5%. But let's think about if we right now are only able to lower it to our income tax to 3%, that's cutting it in half. Mm-hmm. And that's really has huge implications, I think, for our economic development and our ability to try to attract people to Kentucky, try to get people to stay here. We have close to this area with Fort Campbell, we have situations where a lot of people will leave after they retire and stay and move to Tennessee, but they still, a lot of them are close enough they can shop in Kentucky because our income tax is a lot less than theirs there. And if we try to lower that rate too much, too fast, what may happen is that we have to increase. And when we look to the state sales tax, it would be one way to go. We already exempt more items than we actually tax. And so what that would involve would be either raising the rate or adding it to things that, certainly we don't want to add it to groceries and things like that. So I think that would be a lot less attractive if we cut the income tax too much to where we had to raise the sales tax too much. I don't think that would be a really a good trade.
Anybody else?
All right. Well, thank you all. I know this upcoming session isn't a budget session. However, we do have another question that does pertain to expenses. But jail cost must be a topic of this panel, obviously, with the folks that we have sitting in this room. Is there anything on the horizon to assist local governments in this area? For instance, is there a plan to increase reimbursement from the state? Is there a plan to move county inmates through the system faster so the cost maybe doesn't lie exclusively with counties? Could there be a plan to reduce the number of jails so that the remaining ones are solvent? Does anyone have a comment on that?
The only thing I can think of is, we're still 2 years out, so I'm trying to hit all those things. I haven't heard of anything regarding a change to the reimbursement rate. I would support that, whether or not the resources are there. And remember, this is not a budget year, so if there's going to be an expenditure of some kind, the voting threshold changes, and the will of the leaders, more than any normal budget year, the will of the leadership's got to be to open the budget back up and that sort of thing. So I don't expect that. In 2 years, there's a pilot program that I hope will eventually go statewide. It's happening in Christian County right now. I don't think it's in Hopkins County, but I could be wrong about that. It was the Senate Bill 90 conditional discharge and dismissal program, and I'm butchering the name because I didn't come up with that part, but it is my bill. I didn't name it. But the bill helps get people that are in custody right now, pretrial, out of custody and into the care of behavioral health providers. So people that are struggling with substance use addiction or psychological or psychiatric disorders that everybody recognizes has those problems can get access to that care a lot faster. The case is just sort of set on the shelf as a deferred prosecution for a time while they're seeing that provider actively. And those there are reports back to the court and to the Commonwealth and the defense attorney. But that's helping to relieve the pressure on county jails very slightly in the places where it's being used. If it goes statewide. I know there are about 7,000 inmates statewide that could benefit from that. That's a huge pressure relief on county jails that could be utilized if the state would take it statewide in a couple of years when the pilot ends. But I'm not aware of anything else, and I haven't spoken to the incoming Judiciary Chair in the State Senate Judiciary Committee, Brandon Storm, about that. But I would just encourage you, particularly judge executives in the room and your jailers, to make sure you and your associations, CAICO and the Jailers Association, communicate that to the leadership and to your senators and your representatives, particularly the reimbursement rate. I'd start that conversation now for 2026's budget cycle, because that budget document, there are already meetings happening today, right now, this month, about what goes into the 2026 budget. You all know that. You need to get earlier into that process and make sure they know that that's a need that you've got. And bring the receipts. Show where it's an impact on your budgets, because we all know that it is, but not everybody in leadership. And remember that leadership just changed in the Senate. The House, I believe, is the same leadership team. Yeah. Thank you, Chris. But the Senate, you've got Robbie Mills from this part of Kentucky, from Henderson, that's now caucus chair. You've got, I think, is it Mike Nemus is the... is the new whip? No, he's the new chair, that's right. And then Max Wise, of course, is the new majority floor leader, not from our part of the state, but new to that position. So educate those folks. Make sure they're aware of what your needs are and where that stacks up on your priority list.
I was on the jail task force last year. One of the big key items we saw is the classification process. And how long it was taking, and I think one of those pinch points I think we saw is how long that took, and I think we've offered up some solutions maybe that will come out this session about who can do that, who can do those classifications.
That'd
and I
great.
Think that would be a, mm-hmm. a trigger point that would help a lot.
Sure,
it just
be.
Seems like an easy fix. I don't know what the hang up is. I think the state's holding on to it too long, but I think that's hot on the fire.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else?
All right. Well, let's move on to a topic that I think impacts everyone in this room as well, and that's housing. Do you all see any bills, or do you have any personal thoughts during the upcoming legislative session? Is there anything that could be done from the General Assembly perspective in regards to the housing need across the Commonwealth?
Talked enough. I'm taking a
5-minute
break.
You gonna take a 5-minute break?
I do know there are several bills in the works as far as making some of the regulations and some of what the county does, city does, the state does more uniform, and so it's more of a one size fits all, which is kind of the opposite of what we've done in the past. But to make it easier for builders, and I know there's some things to encourage more people to become home builders and to stay in that profession. I don't know of any, since it's not a budget year, I don't know of any incentives other than maybe some tax incentives that may be in the works, but as far as anything that would actually do any kind of compensation or anything like that for a new home owner, I haven't seen anything like that.
Okay. Anyone else? I see you going for the mic.
Well, this is not really housing, but it relates to housing, and you know our houses have electricity and energy or gas, natural gas or whatever. And to me, this is one of the biggest issues that's facing our state out there. And you know what's happened when I came in the legislature 30 years ago, Kentucky had the second lowest electricity rates in the nation, and we were like the lowest east of the Mississippi River. And we're not anywhere close now, and I'm sure we even make it in the top 20. And I just saw recently where they're actually for economic development, they're starting to rank some states as far as energy reliability. Now, that reliability may also relate to affordability because, you know, it can be reliable and not affordable and it still doesn't help you. But I think our ranking was 38th. And that's certainly not good because what we're seeing now is that we have a lot of people wanting to come to Kentucky. We know there's going to be a huge demand, increased demand for electricity because of high tech, because of AI, some things like that. I don't think the shift to electric vehicles is going to be as significant as we once thought that it was. But what's happening is that Kentucky as a state has been forced by our federal government to do fuel switching. 93% of our electricity came from coal when I first came here. Now it's probably about 68%. And that's all been forced upon us by our federal government. And you know, we have people who are wanting to shift away from baseload generation, which, you know, like coal has a stockpile 30 or 45 days on site. That's one of the most reliable sources there are. It runs, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, all year long. And you cannot replace that type of thermal generation, dispatchable electricity with intermittent sources like wind and solar that are maybe 18% efficient. And so we have to finally understand that. I think people are starting to talk more about reliability and affordability, and that's a good thing for Kentucky, and we've got to make that happen. Natural gas is a great fuel. We use a lot of it, but you have to understand that when you hook a power plant up to a natural gas pipeline, the natural gas arrives just in time to generate electricity. And if there's a disruption in the pipeline or more demand than what's available, then that can also disrupt your ability to generate electricity. We saw that happen in Winter Storm Elliott. We're right in Slaughter's in my home county. They had a generator or some kind of regulator or something, it's a regulator, that malfunctioned and there was gas flowing through the pipeline, but it wasn't able to send the gas at the proper pressures that could be used to generate electricity. So we've got to understand the limitations on trying to switch away from thermal baseload generation to intermittent sources and the restrictions that is out there on that system.
Yeah, I wanted to add something on that. I won't pretend to speak for everybody up here, but I can probably speak for everyone up here. If anyone's got a silver bullet answer to this issue, please see us afterwards. We'd love to talk to you. It's very complex. There's a lot of things that go into it. But one of the things I think it's important to think about this issue of the housing is in the why and the what it means to us. And this is an economic development issue. It's hard and core for in so many levels. And it's almost like we need to go back to the company store and company housing to be able to recruit industry. I think there is an angle in there for rural Kentucky to benefit from that because our housing costs tend to be a little cheaper. And there's been some discussions about putting some of this together for business recruitment and economic development in our rural areas. So I would encourage us to think about it from that standpoint. Until we get ready to spend public dollars to subsidize contractors, I don't think there's really any direct supply side answer for this. It's something that we'll have to chip around the edges on with a lot of different issues.
Thank you all. This is more of a statement than necessarily a question, but one of the initiatives that this board supported last year and came to fruition is the West Kentucky Law Enforcement Training Center, and I want to thank each and every one of you all for supporting that. But I do want to especially say a word of appreciation to Representative Williams for bringing that over the finish line. Is there anything you wanted to mention about that complex?
Well, I mean, I think it's a big deal. It's a big deal for West Kentucky law enforcement in general, not just my district, obviously. I've been on that road driving to Eastern back and forth, and I know those law enforcement officers that do it day in and day out, and they think, do I really want to do this? Mm-hmm. And it goes into their whole mindset when they're thinking about even applying for that job. And I think this is a good opportunity for us in Western Kentucky to put our thumbprint on law enforcement in Kentucky instead of it coming just from one area of the state. And I think it's going to be a huge economic boom for this area as well. There's a small pipeline for law enforcement officers when they reach that point where they're not out stopping cars, and they have a use. And transitioning into that training scenario is a great transition. And, I think that it's going to be a big boom for everybody around, and we're glad to have it in our district. If we can just get it over that, get it started, I think it's in the design phase now, and it's going to be big for this end of the state.
And I know Mayor Cotton isn't here today, but they've already actually started doing trainings.
Yes,
they're at the existing facility that they have, even before they're able to.
Yeah.
So that's
we kind of built it on the premise of let's show that we can make this work, and already get it started, and the county and the city both really stepped up, and they donated property. They had a big investment in it, and we had so much. Approvals from around the surrounding areas, letters of support, and it was really a good combined effort to get that over the finish line. I'm proud of it. Yeah.
Thank you for that. I do have one topic that I did not send out to everyone, but I think it is a critical topic. But this is something that came in over the weekend: vapes. Vapes are obviously not taxed like cigarettes. And our school resource officers are catching youth more and more with those vape devices. We're curious, is there anything that anyone's looking at for the future that could potentially increase the taxes on vapes, or like there is on cigarettes? Anybody?
I think there might actually be a pause legislatively, if only because there's a case just out of the Fifth Circuit that's on appeal, or is about to be on appeal to the U.S. Supreme Court. I can't tell you what that case is now.
It's on the docket.
Okay, well, there you go. So I was behind where I thought. But until there's a decision in that, which doesn't relate to taxation so much as it does the legality of what the FDA did, and its procedural and administrative law nonsense. But until that's settled, I doubt there's any meaningful change on that. And you guys that are still going to be around, and you're still in meetings, and you've got caucus retreats coming up this week and next, you might be able to know if there's something coming to adjust what we just passed. But I'm not aware of anything.
All right. Thank you, Senator. We can just go down the line for this question, sort of general for everyone, but what are your top legislative priorities? And you may have already touched on those, but what are your top legislative priorities for the upcoming session?
Change diapers.
For those that don't know, he has triplets at home. New triplets.
Could go either way, really.
Those young parents.
I'll go ahead and start. We'll just work our way down the line then.
Yeah.
Well, it's been a pleasure, certainly, for the last 8 years for me, for state rep, and having the distinct honor of chairing VMAP, Veterans Military Affairs Public Protection. But what I want to tell y'all is some of our ideas for some of the bills come from y'all. Right now, I'm currently working. I'm blessed with three county judge execs, and I'm looking at all three of them are here. And working with Judge Young, he came up with the idea. He serves on 911 and EMS boards and stuff. And what we found is the levels to trigger an audit have not been changed in years. And so we're currently working on a bill together to change the levels, because some of these EMS boards and stuff have not done anything different. It's just inflation. And it's kicking them to a new level, and they're having to have extra audits. So that's something we're working together. Judge Gillum and I are getting ready to go visit. We have some damage maybe on some of the roadways and stuff from metal wheels, and we're going to go speak with the Amish community after this and see if we can work on some kind of compromise to maybe not have some of this heavy farm equipment with no rubber, but at least get that covered in rubber. It's going to be hard to ever get the horse and buggies and stuff, and we realize some of the hoofs actually cause some damage too, but it's a compromise and it's a start, and so we're going to work on that. So and then Judge Humphreys and I, we've been working on a memorial for the veterans and stuff, and I think that's still underway, and and trying to do something intriguing for them. So I want to let y'all know that the ideas come from y'all. You reach out to us, because that's where we get these ideas for these bills. So it's been a pleasure serving, and I hope to keep doing so.
As I would reiterate what Walker just said. A lot of the things that, you know, particularly happened in the tornado in my district, and how it affects contractors come in and take advantage of homeowners. When you start digging into that, and you think, well, this is a problem across the entire state, and you talk to Farm Bureau and State Farm, you say, this is a really big problem. So I'm looking at some of those things that we can regulate, some of those contractors, and protect homeowners in doing that. Grid modernization, I know Chairman Gooch here talked a lot about energy and our grid reliability. It's one of those things you don't think about. You just turn the light switch on and it's there. We are at a point where everyone's screaming that we don't have enough power and we have an old, outdated system. So anything that we can do, I'm kind of looking at that, how we can upgrade our grid system and make sure we have affordable and reliable power, I think, are two of the big things for me.
Thank you. Generally, on the short session, I try not to sponsor any bills. I always generally end up sponsoring something. But you have to understand that in this short session, there are a lot of restraints on us. We go in January for 4 days, and it's a 30-day session. And so what happens is once we leave, we only have 26 remaining days. And when you consider that a bill has to, you know, be filed, let's say, in the House, it goes to a committee. The committee has to post it, they have to hear it, they have to pass it out, then it goes to the floor, then there are certain day restrictions on when those things can happen. Once the bill passes the House, then it has to go to the other chamber and vice versa. And so when you consider only 26 days, there's really not a lot of time to pass a lot. And so I try not to do a lot, but I think that we mentioned earlier, energy is such a huge issue for Kentuckians. You know, for our senior citizens, for businesses that tend to locate here, and we have to do all that we can to make sure that we have a competitive environment where people will want to invest their money and create jobs in Kentucky. And that happens if we have affordable, reliable electricity, if we have a good tax structure, if we're friendly to business and try to help in ways that we can. Workforce development is another thing where we're trying to make sure we're educating our workforce to where they have the skills that industry needs. And you know, another thing that's always going to be an issue is child care, because you know, people that take those jobs, a lot of them have families at home, and so those are some things that are always going to be there, and we can try to work on those. But there may not be specific bills to address each and every one of those.
I want to thank you all for having us here today. I think one of the things that goes along with the economic development is I'm going to work again on the veterinary school at Murray State, the doctorate program for veterinary school, at Murray State. Passed the House overwhelmingly, got stalled in the Senate, but hopefully, even with a short session, we can get this over the line, and this will help. And to go along with the economic development and what Jim was saying, it's hard to get businesses in here if you don't have the electricity, enough electricity. You're stalling in a lot of places. I hear a lot, Judge Humphreys, about from Kenny, my husband, who is a judge in Callaway, about the jails. I wish we had a solution. If anybody is Jason said, if you've got an idea, let us know about it. We appreciate all that you all do. We want to know what you want. Again, thank you.
Since I'm not going to be there, I'm looking forward to not being there. I'm just thankful for the chance we've been able to serve you for the last 12 years. It's been a treat. It's been a blessing. It's been hard and challenging to be away and to do the work that's important. But as I was telling my table mates earlier during lunch, I'm already missing that. I was famous for being one of the first ones to get a bill request in early April or mid-April when we're done with the first session or the last session we just finished. I'm eager to start working on that, and I've missed doing that this year and working on bills. ahead of the 2025 session. But I know, apart from changing diapers for the triplets that we have, which I certainly will be spending a lot of my time doing, my goal during the 2025 session is to pray for these folks, to pray for Donald Trump, to pray for J.D. Vance, to pray for Governor Beshear, to pray for our Congress and our Senate, and to pray for our state legislators, all of them, and both parties, regardless of what they're going to be working on. And there's some of these, I agree, and I really like all the people I sit up here at this table with. West Kentucky is exceptionally well represented. I can't say the same about other parts of Kentucky, in both caucuses, in both chambers. There are some other people I don't care for very much at all, and their values and their beliefs. And I'm not just talking about Democrats or Republicans in one group or another. I'm looking at some people's social media feeds, and I object to a lot of that, but I'm going to try to pray for all of them, because I don't do that enough, and they are our leaders, and they've got important work to do. Jim mentioned that it is a short session. He's 100% right, and it's really hard to get legislation through in those 26 days, but I do want to draw your attention to these numbers. In 2023, the last short session, odd-numbered session, there were 594 House bills and 286 Senate bills. Mm-hmm. 26 days won't shorten the number of bills that these folks file anyway, and there will be something that draws a lot of attention. And there will be something that moves forward that you'll love, and there will be something that moves forward that you can't stand. So I'd ask you not just to pray for all these folks, regardless of what your faith background is, be involved with them and communicate with them. You belong to a lot of associations that are very quick to send out email blasts, and there are some legislators up here that'll, our beloved late friend C.B. Embry was famous for counting up how many emails he got on a yes and how many emails or calls he got on a no, and that's the way you go. There are some people up here that are very persuaded by those blast emails. They all look the same. They'll get 100 yeses and 800 no's, and that tells you which way they're going to go. I find it's much more effective when I hear from my judge executive. When Cody Young sends me a text message, I'm listening to what he's got to say. When Carter Hendricks wants to tell me something that I need to be working on, I'm paying attention because I know who they are, and I've got that relationship. You need to have that relationship with these folks, old and new. So that's what I'd ask for. So thank you.
Good luck following that.
You got triplets?
I do not. I'm one cat. this will be finishing up my sixth year, looking forward to two more years, and it's kind of like what Walker said, I've learned that the best bills that you really work hard for and the ones that have an impact are the ones that you work with a constituent. Maybe it's your local judge, maybe it's a local citizen. I've done that on a few, and those are fun to do. Those give real meaning to what you do, and as it gets close, the funny thing is as it gets real close to passing, you start seeing the lobbyists jumping on it so they can take credit for it. But I like those bills that are just constituent and representative and the Senate based. Those seem to be the ones that are real. One of the things I would like to work on and have been in some discussion, I know Jason is involved in this as well, is some of the equalization with our school funding, our public school funding. We've got a couple of districts, there's about six in the state, two here in the Penny Rile with Lyon County and Livingston, where you've got, since CARA was passed in 1990, the funding is not fair for these two districts. And it's based on property rights and the property rights values and different things. But it really limits what those two school systems can do. And they've done a great job with what they have. And I would like to see something done. It wouldn't cost the state any more money. That's money that's already put into that education fund, so it would just be coming from that. So I don't know what the answer would be, but I would like to find something that works better for those two school systems.
Thanks. I want to follow up on that. We've looked into the equalization. You know, when you talk about fair, that's in the, like, beauty, it's in the eyes of the beholder. But in essence, everyone else's funding under this formula is doubled in Livingston, Lyon County's That is kind of a good example of what's fair and not in that. There's a couple of things that I'm going to be working on this session. One, I think I'm going to carry a bill to funnel some more of the Juul settlement fees directly into a prevention and cessation program effort for targeting minors. There are a couple of programs that we're seeing that one's run through the University of Kentucky, one I can't remember who's the sponsor of it is, but they've had really good success in dropping the banking rates from a cessation standpoint and stopping people from starting this. For those of us who have children or grandchildren in the school system like I do, it's a real problem. It's a real problem with our kids' peers and probably some of our kids and grandkids in here. So I'm going to look forward to that. As Ag Chair, there's a couple of things that I think we'll touch this year. The China farmland bill to keep China from buying Kentucky farmland. Made it through both chambers last year, but did not become law. Got lost at the last moment when we went back over to the House. Chair Heath is out this time. I don't know who will be sponsoring that in the House, but I imagine since everything was ironed out this past time, I'm assuming that will go forward. One thing that I'm going to be involved in, there were some EPA air quality standards involving pork producers. Our commercial livestock production comes under a great deal of scrutiny from the environmental groups and the animal rights groups, and there are some things that we can do in that space to kind of push back on that a little bit. Like Mayor Best said, the vet school will be front and center. We passed a joint resolution last year to study the effects of this. Deloitte was hired to go in and study the impact and validity of this vet school at Murray State. A doctor of osteopathic medicine at Eastern and making Western Kentucky and R2 research. Those studies were made public right before Thanksgiving, so we'll be going through those. I believe actually a couple of them are being heard in education today, and we will hear the vet school on December 19th in Ag. So that's something that we're obviously very focused on for any of us that are directly or indirectly involved with large animal production in this area is something that we desperately need is more, especially rural large animal vets. One of the main things that I'm working on this session will be a bill to focus on rural economic development. It's been a project of Commissioner Shill's, and this past budget session we dropped $5 million in the budget to fund small rural economic development efforts. And this bill, we're still working through some of the details before the session, but it's the framework that will allow us to go forward and do this. And it's something that I'm very passionate about from a rural economic development perspective. I have seven counties that track from Fulton County all the way up to Crittenden County, and only two of them break into more than 10,000 residents. So mine's a very rural district. We have a lot of good opportunities in our rural areas for some economic development, but there hasn't been a lot of attention because it's not the big sexy projects. And this is something that'll do. We're taking a more value-added approach. As most of you in the room know, the economic development perspective that we presently do, it's all about jobs, job creation. And sometimes the best things that we can do is to support and enhance our existing industry that may not create any additional jobs, but if it does, a very small number. So we're going to try to work into this space through ag development for economic development. Maybe look at some vertical integration for some processors and that sort of thing.
All right. Well, thank you all. Any final comments from anybody? Well, thank you all for being. Are there any questions from anyone out here? One final. All right. Well, good. Well, thank you all again being here. Always appreciate your support of the Pennerall ad. And Senator, we will be praying for you and for everyone else up here. So thank you all.
Thank you. Yeah. Let me just keep going.